You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
It's okay. I'm here. It's been a while since you've had one of those nightmares. Tell me, what was it about?
It's only fragments. Nothing's clear. You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades.
Look!
My family's been fighting them for centuries.
Your blood comes from dukes and great houses. Here, we're equal. What we do for the benefit of all.
Well, I'd very much like to be equal to you.
Maybe I'll show you the way.
Deal with this prophet.
Send assassins.
Fade Rotha. He's psychotic.
I see possible futures all at once. And in so many futures, our enemies prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through.
A form of power that our world has not yet seen. The ultimate power.
I want you to know I will love you as long as I breathe.
You will never lose me as long as you stay who you are.
Consider what you're about to do, Paul Atreides.
Silence!
Welcome to the Periodic Table of Dune. It's time to sing the Dune song. Dune, 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 Dune.
Sorry, my nose thing keeps falling out.
I got thrown by Quinny's mustache because it does not look like how he thinks it looks. But, you know, if you're going to talk about space fascism, why don't you talk about space fascism?
Let's talk about space Hitler. And this is definitely just the thing that goes up my nose so that you can't steal my water.
You're wearing it desert style, I think. Oh, he knows our ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I know how to do it my desert boots just the
Who
right way.
Who taught you how to do that, Quinny?
Nobody.
It just seemed better though. Okay, I'm fine. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And at which point in time, Stilgar goes, oh my God, he's the Messiah. Oh.
Fresh from my complete blank that we reviewed Dune Part 1. sorry, but I totally forgot that. We're talking Dune Part 2, which is crushing it at the box office at the moment. So if you haven't heard about this little film, can't help you. Don't really know what to do with that. How are you going? How are you going, Jill? How are you going, Quinny? Good? Right. Doing well?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm better now that I've taken that thing away from my nose.
What seemed like
a funny joke eventually became pretty uncomfortable.
We left Peter in the desert. She's still searching for her Shai Hulud. She's unable to make it tonight, but that's okay because we can talk about what everyone wants to talk about, which is why did they not release the sandworm popcorn bucket in Australia? Everyone has gone mental for this thing. Why can't we get one? Why can't we get this?
I love the fact that at the moment, the two topics of conversation for basically the entire world are, how do I get one of those popcorn buckets and can we fill it with the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience?
Like, ever since essentially... we spoke about that on the last show, it has just been all over the internet. Oh yeah, it's just got
on. I know, right?
We're trendsetters. I mean, is the evil villain what was the nothing? Wasn't that the thing?
The nowhere.
Was it? Yeah, something like that.
No, the no something. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, if he wasn't holding the Dune popcorn bucket, going, "Come in here," it's a world of pure imagination.
The creepy thing is the person inside that fucking thing is a 16-year-old girl. And what's more, they've just gotten a movie deal. The fucking Nowhere or the Nothing or the whatever the fuck that thing is called has gotten a movie deal to create an entire story around the and it's like, what is wrong with this world?
The thing that was created from a ChatGPT script has been given a movie.
Correct.
So yes. Welcome to...
We see the irony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, how did we get here?
I mean, you know, it's just like all it is just green lighting asylum films quicker. Like, I'm not surprised that they're making a film of it. I just know that in the content generating machine that is ChatGPT and open source thievery, it's gonna.
We
push
literally
stuff
had
out.
A whole strike about this for months.
Yeah.
I know, right? And now we're kind of just like, oh, no, let's just go running towards it.
Oh, God.
We're not talking about that, though. What are we talking about tonight?
No. Dune. Part two.
Dune, where's my sandworm?
Where's my sandworm, Dune?
I left it in the south.
Or Dune, what's mine say?
I left it in the southern hemisphere. That's where I left my sandworm.
Oh, good.
Look, hopefully one day there'll be an STL file for you guys and you can print your own.
Oh, the sandworm?
Of the bucket, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm disappointed that people haven't leaned into it and called it the fuck bucket, but at the same time, you know.
People are.
Yeah.
Remember someone went good. To printed a T-shirt that said, "I'm just here to fuck the Dune popcorn bucket."
Yeah, like there was a whole SNL skit. Like. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
I will also shout out, well done to one of the local cinemas who managed to create a Dune ice cream, like sandworm ice cream special for the...
Really? Great,
well done. Yeah, I mean, come on. People do
Is
do
it
fun
taste
theme.
Of sand?
Probably. Anakin Skywalker hates them.
What does it taste of the water of life? There's and a lot after of, you've had it, you get blue eyes.
There's
and,
a lot of euphemisms and other stuff that we're going to be peppering through this entire podcast. But come on, let's get there. Let's get somewhere. We're doing Dune Part 2. So if you haven't seen Dune Part 1, I don't know why you're in Dune Part 2. And if you haven't seen Dune Part 2, I don't know what you did on the weekend. But if you just haven't got around to it, that's okay.
Yeah. Right, well, I better leave then.
Except
you were doing your own homework.
Exactly.
I was. I was delving back to the year of my birth and watching the original.
And when you're talking about original, what did you get to go and have the pleasure of watching, Jill? Oh.
Dude.
What?
Yes, but yes, but I mean, which one? There's many different Dunes.
Oh, yes, sorry. Okay, specify. The 1984 Dune, Karl McLaughlin, by David Lynch.
Yes.
The amazing thing about Karl McLaughlin that I only just realized is that he is basically the same age in that Timothy Chalamet is in this one.
And you know what? When I was watching it, I'm like, wow, they really looked at this and said, who looks like him but now? And then Timothy Chalamet. They did a
but
pretty
the same
good
time.
Job in like casting Paul Giamatti. I mean, Paul Atreides.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti. Yeah. I would love to see Paul Giamatti as Paul Atreides.
Wow. That'd be incredible. I would watch the fuck out of that. But I do find it funny that like whilst Karl McLaughlin is the same age as the fucking what's his name? He looks like a middle-aged man in that first film. Like he doesn't look like a teenager. He looks like in his 20s something or something like that.
He does look early 20s. I mean, like comparing him to now, like he's aging fabulously.
I couldn't
believe like how young he looked in that film.
But I don't know. I still feel like, you know, modern Paul still looks younger. I don't know. But
Timmy's got the baby face.
He does. He does. And then as they go through this, the movie and they age him, like he's still very baby faced. Mm. And timelines are one of the things that I know that we're going to talk about in here in terms of how long things take and how, and also how long the fucking film is.
Yeah, because it's a very long film, and the first one was quite a long film, and everything that's about Dune is quite long. No one gets away. Like, I think that's one of the things you've got to think about. When you think Dune, you've got to think long. Sandworms, they're long. Book series, it's long. Time in production, long. You know? Sometimes this thing just goes on for fucking ever.
And for an 80s movie, long, like 2 hours.
Yeah, and that was the heavily cut down one. Mm. There's like, I believe that there's a 5-hour version of it floating around.
Ooh. But but I mean, there's always a 7 or 8 hour cut of Dune somewhere, because when you're talking about filming, you're just like, let's just get it all on the screen. We'll just do it. It's fine. We've got this scene and this scene. And like, there was a whole actor that was cut out of Dune Part 2 who recently came out and was like, all of my scenes were gone.
I do feel sorry for Tim Blake Nelson, because he, completely on the cutting room floor. Okay. There was a character who was in the first film who didn't make it in the second film. I'm like, oh, that's harsh. And I saw a comment from Villeneuve saying, when I've cut something, it's cut forever. Cutting these things hurts me. It feels like killing my children. So I'm never going to sew them back together into some Frankenstein-like thing. So when your scenes are cut from Denis Villeneuve, they're proper fucking cut.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shade, Snyder.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, is it ever really going to die, or will it just sit there in the realms of like, it's a DVD extra, if they ever release DVDs anymore?
Maybe.
But they don't. They don't make physical media anymore. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, look, we can't talk about the terrible state of the production of the industry. We need to talk about the movie Dune.
Dune.
And talk about everyone involved in Dune.
Yes, we do.
We start with the synopsis on the second one, and then we can jump into what you guys think.
Do you have any appropriate... Okay, so two questions. We've got appropriate music, and what shit accent am I going for? Do you want something Harkonnen? Or Harkonnen, depending on how you pronounce it?
If it Harkonnened back to a simpler time. maybe, you know what I would... I would like... my vote is for... Christopher Walken.
Oh.
But hey, I'm willing to open it up to the floor if anyone wants to, you know.
Okay, anyone in the chat, if you want anything, because I was very impressed with Austin Butler's go at saying, you know what, fuck it, I'm gonna have a go at doing Stellan Skarsgård's accent.
At least he didn't come out sounding like Elvis. Like, no. Full props to him.
Yeah, full props for that. But also, the casual shade thrown at Dave Bautista is like, yeah, I'm going to do the Harkonnen accent, but Dave, I notice you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Serious actor, Dave Bautista, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, you leave Dave Bautista alone. He looks great.
he plays angry so well.
And he's played angry for a lot of films for a long time, and he knows that, and that's okay. Yes.
But this is serious angry, okay?
Yeah, as opposed to funny angry, which is a very different range of emotion. Yeah.
Apparently, I was supposed to put the music choice is going to be a weapon of choice, but it's not. I have a different weapon of choice. Ready, Mr. Music. Prepare your accent, Quinny. I don't know. Like,
okay, we'll go with...
we're going to get something in there.
Okay. Wow! Oh, wow. There's music. Paul Atreides unites with Jani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his whole family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, he must prevent a terrible future. Only he can see. Wow. Dune. So much sand. Wow. Florence. Clothes. Nice that you're wearing clothes, Florence. Yeah. This is your father's signet ring. I've had this up my ass for 5 years.
Yeah, that's right. Spice up your life.
Yeah.
It's time for Denis Villeneuve's Dune. Which, you know, I would have loved to have a bit of Spice Girls in the soundtrack. It's a bit dull. There needed to be a party scene. I was waiting for Stilgar and the Fremen to just bust out one of those underground raves like in The Matrix. Then you would have understood it. You would have been like, I know, that's why they're the free men or Fremen. Get it? Fremen. It's a metaphor.
Yeah, they're like, having a good time underneath the ground.
I wonder if
water
this,
that they never go in.
I wonder if this film is a metaphor.
No.
Anyway, nah, it doesn't have any geopolitical conceptual drama in it. Oh, wait.
I do wonder how many people watched this film and were looking at it and went, so they're actually Middle Eastern. And the empire is
0% of Americans.
Yeah, it's like, hang on, there's a bunch of people who've come from other planets to a large desert area and whose sole purpose is to extract something that they need to fuel transport across the galaxy. I don't know
Very valuable.
I don't know what euphemism is coming out of here.
What
the fuck is this all about? I can't imagine any of the countries on the planet Earth doing anything like this at all.
Never. Not.
I couldn't imagine rebellions. I couldn't imagine people getting a little bit sick of being treated badly. Nah.
I certainly can't imagine people, you know, looking for a religious reason for going to war against the invaders and becoming a guerrilla force that would certainly, that would never happen. That would never, ever
Industrial
happen.
Industrial Revolution, capitalism, who?
Yep. No.
I mean,
no.
What? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I love to think that there are people out there who this is slowly but surely opening their little blue eyes and they're like, maybe. There's layers to this, but also there's probably not. There's a whole bunch of people going.
I love that the audio dropped out on this. So it was just you going. Ride that worm. Jill, how did a question just on this? I know that you saw the first one. Having watched the other Dune, where you actually kind of got to pick up the rest of the story that, you know, no spoiler really here. It plays out the rest of that movie. It just has different beats towards the end. How did you feel with very special boy Paul becoming very special man Paul?
Here's the funny thing. I watched Dune 1 before I've watched original Dune.
Yeah.
So watching Dune 1, I was like, this is all just, there's a vast landscape and there's some very boring characters and I'm not getting any of this. And so I was like, eh. That's why I gave you guys the tickets for Dune 2, because I was like, eh. And so I thought, what is all the fuss about? I'm not going to go into the books. I don't have time for that.
No.
I'll watch the 84 Dune. Yeah. And I watched that. I'm like, I get it.
Right.
Now I understand. Partly because there is an enormous exposition dump at the start of the film.
Oh, my exposition.
Like, enormous.
Was yours the one with like the hand drawn animation stuff?
No, it's Princess Alurin at the start, tells you everything of what's going on.
She just basically opens up the book and goes, chapter one.
Yeah, she's like, okay, girl, there's this planet, this planet, and this planet, and we're doing this to get the spice so we can travel. And we're like, and I'm like, sweet, now I understand everything.
And now I'm with you. Okay.
This is the primer that you needed.
Also, really though never particularly explained very well in the books, here is a navigator that just looks like some kind of giant fucking weird worm shit dude.
With all a vagina designed, face.
All designed by Geiger.
Oh, that's 100% Geiger. It was very vulvic.
Yeah.
But I found all the characters very easy to understand, all of their motives, what was happening. Mm. It was actually like an amazingly well-produced movie. I thought all of the sets and the costuming was fantastic. I mean, the special effects leave things to be desired, but it was 1984. We could forgive that.
And the scope and scale of that film, when you think that like barely the year before Return of the Jedi was coming out, you're like, oh, okay, right. So this is, you know, a film that is doing like a massive space opera or spice opera.
Definitely. I think
Allowed. You're allowed. That's fine. Continue. Carry on.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars and other sci-fi of that era were definitely, you know, laying the groundwork for these huge films that we have now. And so, yeah, I mean, watching the original definitely gave me a better appreciation for like what the series is about. And then I went back and I rewatched again Dune 1, and I'm like, this is like exactly the same as the original. I'm like, the lines, there are like script that is exactly the same, and I'm like, are they just taking it from the book and not doing anything with it? Or yeah,
kind of.
Right, okay. Because like, I mean, people have interpretations of materials and they do what they want with it. And I mean, like auteur directors like Denis Villeneuve could have like looked at that book and said, right, I'm going to create this screenplay. But it was so much like the 84 movie that I'm like, okay.
And the 84 movie also has a real sense of weird. Like, it fucking revels in how fucking weird it is.
Yeah, but weird in the, like, we're doing high sci-fi way.
Yeah. And also, and, like, you know, there's world-building bits and pieces, which I think were, like, some of the ones I like the Villeneuve ideas better, and other ones I actually miss some of those 1984 kind of David Lynchian crazy shit that's going on.
Really, the only differences I'm seeing is, like, the 40 years of we're in the future now and we can make it look like this.
Yeah.
Because everything else was so similar. I think I, like, preferred the costuming from the 84 movie. I think there was something, like, absolutely lush and regal about the military costumes in that original film that was kind of lacking from this one. And everything had the dark gritty lens in the new one. I mean, when we're talking about the Atreides home planet, I can't remember what it's called.
Caladan?
Thank you. Yeah, that's all got like a blue wash and a dark grit on it. And
yeah, because they have to be really heavy-handed by going, see?
Yes. These are the dark, wet people.
Golden and rich looking. Yes.
Where does all of the royalty-esque military, dark, dull, rainy country goes to the very dry country and takes all of their stuff? Oh, right. Okay. I get what you're doing here. Yeah. That's another metaphor. But
honestly, like beat for beat and scene for scene, it felt like this. I was watching the same movie. I was like, wow, this is like bizarrely similar.
And I agree very much so. I remember watching that first Dune and thinking, this is really beat for fucking beat. Yeah.
And I got quite annoyed when the first Dune stopped and I was like, but you're only halfway through. No. Exactly. And then I was like, oh, it's Dune 2. Oh, okay, fine. You should really make a Dune 3. And then of Dune 2, I was like, oh. Okay, just make
I at
three.
Least know what happens in the second half of Dune 2. I just haven't watched this one.
Interesting. Okay. A few notes, and this is what I don't. This isn't taking away from I think your experience at all, Jill. I just need to get these out there so you're not like when we talk about other things. Okay. First, there is no weirding module. That is a total construction from David Lynchian thing to make those sound guns that you blow shit up with. whereas he took the thing of like, wait, you're killing in the name of someone. It's like, what if I turn the name into something that could kill? Like, that's a Lynchian thing.
Yeah. Which, that was him making shit up.
Yes.
And weirdly enough, the weirding way, which is a thing that is discussed in the books, I saw something today that was like, well, they probably did a better version of that at the end of Pitch Black, the Necromonger fucking thing, where it's moving fast and all, you know, it was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's just kind of
there's so many things that
Imagine fighting on speed, you know, where you sort of you move a little bit like just a slightly bit faster than everyone else. So I don't know,
which is probably hard to show on a screen without it looking stupid.
Yeah.
So it's better to have them go pachow, pachow, pachow.
And saying it later, like I'll get into it during the spoilers, but it was a few changes at the end of the second, like of this Dune part two that I was like, hang on, didn't this other thing happen? Isn't that what it was? I had to go back and just correct myself and go, I think I remember things differently, but they changed a bit of the ending stuff for this Dune Part 2, but it did at least cover the growing into a freedom fighter period of Paul Atreides' life and his mother becoming the Reverend Mother of Arrakis and then figuring out what the Water of Life is, which they seem to go across in this movie very quickly. Technically speaking, he was supposed to have a bit of a sleep for 3 weeks and it was pretty much a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, wait, that's a bit weird. Anyway.
Doesn't feel earned, does it?
No, and there's a, my biggest, like, I, okay, putting it out there right now, I quite enjoyed Dune 2. I thought it was quite special. Like, it was pretty fucking spectacular. It has some amazing action beats. It really felt like it was on a massive scale, and I dug that a great deal. I don't think it's perfect, though. And I think the biggest problem that it has is its pacing.
Yeah.
For a movie that's 2 hours and 46 minutes long, it feels oddly unbalanced in how it hits its beats. And, yeah, the end becomes weirdly rushed, like, you know, really strangely so.
And this is the kind of thing I got to. Like, there was a lot of really cool, interesting bits in Dune Part 2, especially getting to see Geaty Prime a bit more and the more world-building stuff of the Harkonnens and introducing Fade Rauther and all that kind of stuff. It's like, this is great and definitely should have been in Part 1. So that by the time you get to the end of Part 2, you understand why Paul Atreides wouldn't like this person or why they're so evil. You know, it's a lot of kind of like, oh, they're brutal and they're terrible. And then it's like, we'll wait, though, to show you exactly how bad they are till much later.
Yeah.
Which kind of takes away from a lot of the reasoning.
Through the Lynch wonders is it before Sting shows up?
Oh, halfway through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when, you know, the Baron's chatting around about what he's going to do and what he did and stuff, and he's like, yeah, go get them, my pretty.
Like, you do see Sting early in the film, so I was kind of surprised that they didn't reveal that character in the first Dune.
Yeah.
Until, like, the second one now,
played
by Austin Butler. But, yeah, he doesn't really have his full moment until the second half of the original movie.
Because that's what I thought. I thought he was sort of structurally in roughly the same sort of place. But having him at least placed in that first movie would probably help a bit.
I mean, it was a really interesting. I love the world building that they did for the Harkonnens in the second one. It was way better. Like, it's much more interesting in the second one. It's still not as creepily, just obviously disgusting. I think the thing is in the Lynchian one, it just feels disgusting and it's terrible, but.
They feel like weird, creepy scientists that are like kind of obsessed with like vulgarity.
Yeah, and then this one though, just I have to admit, they just felt malevolent. Like, I got that sense of like, oh, they're not really like they're psychopaths, but they also have a functioning society for whatever that is. But it is malevolently evil. Like, you're never sure of what's going on. So I really like that kind of part with it, but not getting to see a lot of different Fremen kind of culture interaction was a bit annoying for me in this one. I mean, it's not like, you know, you got a lot of that in the Lynchian one. You know, you just got to meet them. It's like, here's how you get on a worm. You crawl up it and then you put this thing on and then you just ride it around and everyone just goes, yeah, fine, no worries. and that's kind of the same thing that they did in this one. It's like, yeah, we got on a worm. All right, everyone, we're just going to roll around the worms. Okay, bye. And you're like, oh, that's pretty dull.
Yeah.
Don't really understand too much about them. Still.
Yeah, it's a weird one because they're kind of like, you know, oh, the thing that's going to kill you on this planet's not the desert, it's the worms. And then you have this race of people that have lived for centuries on this planet with no fucking problem. But you never kind of really delve into why that is.
And, yeah, like, I think they could have, once again, for a two and a three quarter hour film, there were elements that probably still could have been pulled out. Like,
I mean, if you're going to have this mysterious native people, and then you never explore, you know, their morality or their ethics or anything like that, you're no better than a fucking colonizer. Like, it still feels like you're outside of this, but you're like culturally appropriating this people because you are the chosen one. I'm like, it just reeks of.
And that is something that I really liked about this version of Dune, is that while, like, when we're talking about, you know, very special Paul, you know, very, very special boy Paul,
Paul Verhoeven,
yes, and his bugs. No, while we're talking about that, in this one, it's very much very special boy who is now becoming very special religious leader. And I think this one did a better job perhaps of the than the Lynch one of skewering the idea of him being a hero.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for you to read it on the surface and go, this guy has come in, he's become part of the tribe, he's tried to assimilate, he's tried to be there, you know, a part of them, and then religiously he is the savior, and so he leads them to victory. This one, I think, does a much better job of going, actually, that's a load of shit. Yeah. And he's buying, he's quite literally drinking the blue Kool-Aid and buying into his own bullshit. And there's the character of Stilgar is so good in this one. And I don't really remember him from the Lynch one as much, but in this one, he's the dude who anytime something magical happens or anything, anytime that Paul farts, anytime that Paul, you know, happens to fall down,
as was prophesied,
he's there going, oh, yes, yes, it is as it is written. Oh, and you're like,
But I love the bookend of the fact that, you know, Chani and the like the northern people from the north are all like, fuck, there he goes again. Like, there goes the southerners. They're just the religious fundamentalists. They're all the morons. Anyway, going to go destroy some more shit over here and laugh at them later. But yeah, they can still fight, whatever. I kind of liked how that was a little bit more done in this one, and they took that a little bit more seriously. Rather than just the, I'm a special boy. Oh my God, I see everything. Okay, fight now. Bye. You know, boom.
Yeah.
At least in this one, Paul was reluctantly going, you know, I don't really want to do that.
Until he did.
Yeah, and then then it ramped very quickly. Like, it kind of, how can you, it's kind of like someone going, no, stop. I don't want to be your messiah. Fine, okay. I'm your messiah.
I'm your
now.
Fucking messiah, bitches.
Yeah. I have big boy voice now.
Yeah.
You know,
everybody bow down before me. Bah.
Yeah, yeah. Bah. You know.
Oh, it's very the voice.
Not,
there's quite a lot of the voice.
Well, he uses it at the end there. He doesn't do it to weird effect of everywhere and convincing people, but it's just that sort of thing. Yeah, it goes very, like, three quarters of this movie is just Paul Atreides going, no, I don't want to do this. If I do this, this is going to be bad. Millions are going to die. I don't want to be responsible for that. And you're kind of like, oh, I'm starting to empathize with this character. And I want it. And when he does just go like, fuck it, I have to do it. I've done it now. And he's just like, anyway, like, holy jihad, you know? And you're just kind of like,
say the J word.
That was very fast. Yeah, that was a very fast switch. And he's just kind of like, don't care anymore. I'm basically omnipotent. Don't have to worry anymore. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Like, as I said, it felt very slow and languid. And then it felt very fast by the wrap up at the end there. But then that's kind of like the Lynchian one. It's very slow for a long time. And then he's in the desert for a bit, and then it just wraps up into the attacking the emperor at the end.
Yeah, the knife fight with Sting. And then
Sting's knife fight, I know.
Yep.
I felt a bit sad that they removed the thing in there with the belt buckle spur thing that basically tries to hump him to death, which was the euphemism from the book. Is that
what?
Did you? Okay, so like in the knife fight, like, this isn't a spoiler. It's literally a book that is over 40 years old. Come on, you know, Fade and Paul have a knife fight, and then Fade has like a hidden poison spur in his belt buckle, and he tries to basically stab Paul with his groin or his hips. And it's just kind of like,
where's that version?
Yeah. But he fails, Jill. He fails. Yeah.
No stabby stuff.
He doesn't succeed.
He's got his shy
halute out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Turns out his knife chipped and shattered.
In the again, very very important point that was made quite well, which I think it was in the Lynch version, wasn't it? Explaining what the Chris knife and why that was so important and, you know, all of that completely bypassed everyone in the second one where, like, you know, he does this thing where he's like, may your knife chip and shatter, and everyone's like, don't care. It's like, that's an insult. That's such an insult, like, to the front.
I love that, which is, you see the meme doing the rounds from the Good Place where it's like, oh, yeah, that's a Fremen insult.
You're devastating. Right.
You're devastated, right now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's important to know, like, a Chris knife, it will degrade and become weak if it's away from its, like, owner, and if it's away from the body harmony, whatever it is, like, you have to be a strong person and your knife gets stronger. Like, that's the whole thing. So cool. A very strong person has a very strong knife and a weak person has a weak knife, and that's, you know, kind of one of the things. But they just moved on very quickly.
Yeah. It's hard because there's so much fucking lore to get through.
Sure.
And there are, like, it still suffers a little bit from big wordiness. You know, where it's like, oh, this person is the Shai Hulud, or this is the Shai Hulud, and he's also the Ilsan Al Gaib, and he's also the Mudi, but also he's also the Muad'Dib. And it's, you know, like, there comes a point where you're like, wow, we've got a lot of lexicon of words here. You know, the Dom Jumgabar, and who are the emperor's fucking
Sadaka,
like,
what about the
easy?
What about the Bene Gesserits? Jesuits. I say Jesuits.
No, I always, as a kid, thought that they were the Bene Jesuits.
The good Jesuits, you know.
Yeah.
And he's Jesuits. Like also the Mos Islak, or what's that? What's the other thing called?
The Mentat.
No, the
Mos Islak. The Mentat?
I like you being the Mos Islak. Mos, what do you want?
I'm looking for the Shai Hulud. Is a Shai Hulud here?
Is there a Shai Hulud in here? I'm going to get you, a little bastard. Oh, that's fucking great.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It has that thing of just going, we're going to keep throwing lore at you more and more and more. And, you know, here have some more characters. Have the emperor and his daughter, and then let's have all of the Bene Gesserit. See, now I can't say it.
Jesuit.
Bene Gesserit. The benevolent Jesuits. Yeah, like, it just keeps kind of adding in until, like, there are a few times I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Oh, come on. You were following along. You know, if you're in black, you're bad. And if you're in white, you go, oh, wait. this made things very difficult. You put the Sadokar in white. Oh, I don't know who's good and who's bad and who's actually evil. I mean, you know, while this was a very long and languid kind of film, it's beautiful. It's beautifully shot. There's wonderful spanning vistas. The, you know, Jill, as you said, it's been a long time since that. The CGI is a lot better. It's a little bit more believable when you're watching all this stuff. And some of that stuff is great. And I like that it went at pains to sort of explain all of the background politicking and ideologies behind a lot of things in this one. I mean, it felt complicated, even though it really was a very simplistic story. And it really kind of went down to this whole fact about, like, everyone is being manipulated in Dune. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're a poor person or if you're part of the ruling class, someone is trying to manipulate you, and that's the whole kind of ideology that's cut through in Dune 2, which is great. It likes a bit of complexity. And then Paul just goes, nah, it's my way or the highway. My steps, my way, Fran.
As soon as you said that, I knew where you were going with it. I was like, fuck it out.
And then the film, again, just like the first one, abruptly ends before actually doing anything that you're like, God damn it. Like, if you're going to, if you're going to stand there and go, oh, I'm just going to lay this up, which is going to be ready for a smackdown, and then it's like end of credit, end of scene, roll credits. It's like, God damn it. Of course there has to be another one now, and I need to know what happens. I want to know what happens.
So wait, they're not making another one of these movies?
They are.
Apparently.
There's a third one?
Yes.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So what a movie 40 years ago could do in 2 hours,
yes,
this one's going full Lord of the Rings Extended Edition.
Yeah. Except,
Maybe worse. Maybe The Hobbit Extended Edition.
It like this Dune Part 2 ends at the same point that the one in the 80s ended at. It's just going on to God Emperor, the next book thing in Dune, a bit. It feels like, who knows what they're going to do. You know, and it's called Dune Part 3 Arrakis Drift. And Chani has gone off and joined a sandworm racing guild.
Too sandy, too furious.
Yeah. And she's riding the back of a sandworm occasionally just saying, family.
Yeah, yeah, and she's just really concerned about her family. Look, who knows? You know, I don't know what's going on with this. It's made a lot of money. I think it's a fair cop because it's very beautiful. It shows great things. Who doesn't love a good sci-fi space opera? It is a good sci-fi space opera.
It is, absolutely.
I encourage you to see it, Jill.
I'll wait till it comes out on streaming. I'm not that gung ho about it, but
which is understandable.
Yeah, it was good to go back and watch that old one though, because it actually helped me understand it a bit better.
Yeah,
amazing explanation.
And I want to get into the spoiler section just so that we can, you know, talk about the bits that is going off in the chat at the moment. It's like, yes, I have a point. You write something in the chat. I want to talk
spoilers.
About
spoilers.
So quickly, rating and / ideas. Like, I really liked it. Denis Villeneuve, great. I like what you're doing. It felt good. It was wholesome. Really enjoyed the Harkonnens this time around. Thought they did a great job. Can't really fault it terribly. Going to give it an 80. I liked it.
Scores in the chat too, please.
Please drop them scores with out of 100 so that I can actually see them.
My only notes are, I was like, a bit long, a bit convoluted, and ramped very strangely. It's very long and kind of slow, and then it just ramps to the end, and then you're kind of like, wait, but where are all these bits that could have? Okay, whatever. I had a good time anyway.
That's it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I thought that it's so impressive visually, and I think what it's actually saying about religion and what it's saying about colonialism and the ability to manipulate a people based on prophecy, I'm fucking way 100% on board with. I think it's very smart. I'm hoping that a lot of people get that. And I think that they did a pretty good job of finding really good action beats that make the film feel more interesting, builds up Chani better than the Lynch version. But I still think for 2.75 hours, I would have preferred them to have gone the full 3 hours if they'd just worked out the pacing on the last act. Because it really kind of suddenly becomes a massive race to a weird ending. So for me, it's 85.
Oh, I was going to say, I wanted to adjust my score.
All right.
Give it 5 more for metaphor. Forgot about that. Like all the colonialism shit, I was like, actually, that was really well done. So I was going to give it 85 more, which is 85. So fuck. Okay, we agree.
Okay, we're 100% on board with this.
Jill, what do you give the Lynch version?
Oh goodness. Oh, don't put me on the spot like that, because even that one I still zoned out a little bit.
Well, give your score about the weird navigator vulva faced.
I mean, that original one, I think it has its charm as an older movie, with doing what it could with CGI and that kind of biz, and for a high sci-fi movie, I don't know, maybe I'd give it like a 75. I thought it was, it made me feel more interested in the storyline than this new one, because the new one was just like, pretty, we're just going to shove pretty, pretty. And then, I couldn't connect to the story at all.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I want to shout out to that Druidic whose score is going to completely fuck our scoring system of 10,191 out of 100.
Sure.
That's a lot.
Yeah. We'll use rounding.
But he has seen it 9 times.
Yeah.
Can we please gonk that's Druidic, because that is the year that the film is set in.
See?
Give him smartly. A
gonk. Oh.
He knew what he was doing.
Kwisatz Haderach. That was the fucking name. The Moses Lack. The Kwisatz Haderach. That was the other name I was trying to think of.
He's an abomination. He's Mo Sislak. Perfect.
Oh, I love it. Amazing. No, it's
just for that, Jill, you get to choose the clip. What clip are we going to? Are we going to the Harkonnen one? Are we going to the Princess Irulan one? Or are you doing a Paul, very special boy Paul and Chani one? Pick one of those.
Oh, give us Princess Irulan. Princess Irulan. See her in the first one.
When she finally understands that maybe she's part of the problem.
Ooh.
Wadib, the prophet, the one who points the way. These are our own religious patterns, aren't they? This is our doing. Wadib means kangaroo mouse, an unusual war name for a Fremen. What if Paul Atreides were still alive?
Enough! This must not come out. Even to your father's ears, understand?
I do, Reverend Mother.
Wait, let me get the spoiler.
I just realized
we're
back from a clip, so.
Yeah. No, that's all
literally,
right.
There's me just going, oh, yeah, there's so much inbreeding in there. Yeah, oh, hang on, we're back. Right, fuck.
Okay, yeah, cool. That was the short but sweet clip. Yeah, look, I really liked having Princess Irulan included in this and more of the Bene Gesserit kind of scheming and annoying stuff where they're kind of like, not really worried about those. We just need to kill him and then we'll keep going with our breeding program because they're, you know, generational. Like when you've been in power for 10,000 years or whatever it is, you really don't care about lifetimes. It's all about the system behind it. Mm. But what happens if the people who've been crushed for so long? Oh, wait, yes, back to metaphors. Anyway, spoiler time. What are the bits you didn't like and that you want to talk about me well? Sorry, that was just...
Wow.
I know, I'm just joking. Someone else bring it up.
I would like to know if Alia was in this film.
Very interesting question. And the spoiler logo is on, so like I'm going to say, Jill, yes, but not in the way you think.
So she doesn't have any kind of sway like she did in the 84 movie?
No, and it's such a fucking weird thing, and it's one of the things that I guarantee you that they've gone, okay, we need this for the next film, and we need something that's going to draw people to the next film.
Okay. Yeah. So we're not going to have a small child deliver threats.
No, in a creepy way.
You do have a baby deliver threats in a creepy way, but only through dreams. Like, Paul, I'm dreaming of you. I'm your sister. I'm talking to you from the womb. What?
Ooh.
Yeah, there's like, she doesn't get born. So, there's, you know, straight up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is one of the things that we were talking about, that the timelines are a bit fucking goofy in comparison.
Yeah.
The Fremen fighting the Harkonnen troops is, you kind of get the feeling that maybe 6 months, maybe a year, whereas in the original film and stuff, it's meant to be years that they're
supposed to be
waging
this
war,
this stuff for years. It feels like, yeah, in this one, it feels like months or maybe a year at a stretch. And originally it is like, I mean, Chani and Paul have a baby. Remember? They have a son. And then he dies in a Harkonnen attack. And that son was called Leto, you know? And then...
Is that in the Lynch one?
Yeah. I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah, in my brain, they do have a baby. They had a son, and then the son got killed in the attack. Or someone tried to assassinate one. Anyway, but, like, it's very definitely a thing. And then later in God Emperor of Dune, they have another son called Leto II, and he turns out to be Space Hitler. Like, there is a
Leto
whole...
Leto the second, or they call him Leto too?
Leto II. Leto Ito. Oh, dear. Yeah, like there's a whole bits and pieces I missed. And yes, that was it, Jill. There's something that freaked me out. I was like, I was watching it going, yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And then I'm like, wait, I'm pretty sure that his sister gets born. And she's like five, which helps you understand the whole point of how long that Paul's been in the desert, because he still looks like adorable coat hanger Timothée Chalamet. You know, he has got a wonderful moisturizing regime in that desert, because he just looks as fresh as the day he stepped off the wet planet to the dry one.
So, I mean, if we're going by normal human lifespans and everything and the way that humans work, all of the fighting back against the Harkonnens, whatever, must be within 9 months, because we know that the Lady Atreides is pregnant.
Jessica.
Thank you. I couldn't remember her name. And hasn't given birth by the end of the film. So that gives you the compressed ass timeline.
Although in the 84 film, they say she aged rapidly, the little girl. She grew up at like light speed.
Right. Okay. Well,
so it might not have actually been as long as like.
So do you want to know who plays
presented age?
Who plays Aaliyah?
She wasn't born in this movie.
I know, but she still shows up.
She does. She shows up.
Okay.
Played by an actor.
Mm. The actor from A Queen's Gambit herself, the single.
That's why Anya was at the things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Anya Taylor-Joy gets her scene. One scene, and I looked at that and I went, well, they're definitely making a third film, because you don't put her in for literally one scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, Fury, like, she'd be used to all the desert and stuff with Furiosa. So she'd be right there for it, going, all right, we could do all the scenes at the same time. But yeah, it was very disconcerting, because it's like, wow, you just threw in someone that's in there that was supposed to be around, and it just turns up as an adult in a dream sequence. And
it was very weird.
And in, you know, what was really great about the Lynchian one is that tiny child stabs Baron Vladimir Harkonnen and kills him and pulls out his heart plug in that one, because heart plugs are a thing and that's fun. But in this one, it's just Paul. Just Paul stabs him, and it's just boring. And then he goes on to like stab Austin Butler. I really expected. Remember that one of Christopher Walken, that meme where he's like, from that other film that he's in, where he's like, you know, I have a gun. He's like, I don't want to. I don't want to do that. That's what it felt like in this, in the throne room. It's like Christopher Walken, give me your empire. He's like, I don't want to. I just don't want to do that. It became weird. It was a strange end.
Like the ending gets so supremely compressed that, like, Paul goes to the southern part of the world, meets up with the radicals down there, drinks some water of life. Half an hour later, is addressing the entirety of the tribe, calls everybody a cunt, says he's going to stab some people, and then they go to war. Oh, and by the way, the emperor's here, which is handy because we need to fight the emperor. Oh, and all of the other ancient houses have also arrived here. They're in orbit. So all of this is done in about 10 minutes. It just gets weirdly compressed, and you're like, you spent so long in the first half of the film.
Yeah, for like 4 hours of, or 4.5 hours of movie to like bring you up to this point that, you know, it's supposed to be this grand and like amazing liberation of a planet and like many people under this emperor. That kind of feels like a ripoff.
Yeah. Like it's probably accurate to what happened in the books. I don't know. But for the big fight, I actually thought the David Lynch version, like the big war of the Fremen versus the Sardaukar and everything.
It felt a little bit more interesting.
Yeah. Like it felt like it had a little bit more scope and scale. Like, yeah, there's giant fucking sandworms coming in and fucking shit up left, right, and center. But like I dug the weirdness of Lynch. Like where the sandworms show up and they're so fucking big that lightning is striking them because they're fucking up the, like, you know, the atmosphere around them.
Mm.
You know, I dug that kind of level of weird rock and roll. So, yeah. Dion, further thoughts?
I'm just still trying to get the idea of the timeline across, like, how long this is. And it still throws me a little bit.
Mm.
And I wish I could understand it a little bit better, because these are two very long films and they have like a lot of shit going on in them. And then it's like, oh, very slow, ramps very quickly. Paul spends most of the time avoiding his destiny, and there isn't really a call to destiny. It's just more like, shut up, Paul, and be the destiny, which is good. But then it didn't quite explain that there is a whole functioning society under Arrakis still, and that there is this capacity. Like, I mean, one of the things that is in the Lynch one, Jill, that you would have seen, is that there is so much water underneath Arrakis that you can turn it into a verdant green planet, but it will kill all the worms, and then spice won't become a thing. And
it's a delicate ecosystem.
Yeah, it's a delicate ecosystem. And that water, like, you know, there is a lot of water, but then this is what can be done, and this is kind of the vision for the future. And that was kind of, like, somewhat mentioned, but it wasn't considered of great import about this whole sort of thing. And, you know, that whole thing at the end, Q, in June Part 2, remember where he's like, I'll use the atomics to destroy all the spice fields. And it's like, okay, so you have nuclear weapons, fine, atomic bombs, yeah, they're around. But that's not what Paul could do. Paul could just turn on the waterworks and make it rain on Arrakis, and then it would fuck everyone. If he doesn't, he can blackmail the galaxy. That's kind of how he takes power anyway. He just goes, do what I say or I will fuck you up because I control the spice. And I can make it happen or not happen. And that's really the whole thing. It's exerting economic pressure to get the result of benefit for the people who've been occupied. So, you know, in some ways they did a really good job with June 2 to explain all this, and in other ways they did an absolutely terrible job to sort of continue with that, which is why I was like, almost there. You almost got it.
Did you enjoy, like, I saw a couple of comments in the chat earlier about people finding Stilgar was a little too on the nose. Like, did you find that, do you? And
what do you mean? Explain.
Well, I think that they were saying that his comedy, the humor of right. him being kind of the almost blindly following faith.
Yeah.
And anything that guy does, he must be the religious leader. He must be Jesus.
He's wearing the thong.
He's wearing the right thong. And when Jesus appears, he's going to be wearing the thong.
Yeah, I've got the boot of Jehovah. All that kind of stuff. In the first one, he was presented very stoically and as a nice... I liked watching him be a bit warmer once you get to know him, and he's adopted Paul into the sort of Fremen culture and everything like that, and he's still a leader. He did have a little bit of too much of a blind faith kind of thing, but then that was easy to explain because they're like, yes, but there's also been this religious organization sowing blind faith into planets. And it's not just this planet, it's all planets, which is one of the things you've got to understand is the Bene Gesserits are not just for Arrakis or just around there. They've been doing this everywhere. On every planet they go to, they sell the idea of a savior that will come and liberate the oppressed. And that's why they suffer. You can suffer because eventually a savior is going to come. And I liked
that. They're the Mormons of the galaxy.
Kind of, but they're more...
I'm more the Catholics, let's be honest.
Knocking door to door on it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're capitalist Mormons. So you're right, Quinny, the Catholics. they're selling all of this kind of an idea, so I didn't mind it wasn't too obnoxious, and at least it presented two different kinds of, you know, one of the other things too is like, oh, the desert people, they're all one people, you know, they're not, you know, it's a huge planet, it has a bit of that problem, like it's Star Wars planets, it's all desert, you know, shouldn't there be different types of worms in different hemispheres? Shouldn't they have different kind of dress or, you know, abilities?
Can't just ask why there's no black worms.
Yeah, you can. Oh.
At least there were Fremen of different colors. That was
yeah.
nice to see that there were, like, it wasn't kind of a monoculture of all people that looked the same.
Just a lifting Middle Eastern culture out of there and plonking it back into somewhere else and having them not explained is a bit on the nose. Because they came across as, you know, a bit dumb, as was intentional, which is kind of, you know, there was a little bit more political infighting, even in the Lynchian version, I think there was. You know, Paul kept trying to get assassinated by other Fremen because they didn't believe he was the Messiah. Or that could have been in the Telly movie. There's so much, yeah, there's so many different things
so
in
many
there.
Dunes. So many dunes.
I don't want to wax lyrical about June. Did I like June? Yeah, absolutely did. The music's great. The fucking cinematography's great. The sci-fi bits are really cool. Some of the action bits are great, you know. I feel like they lent too much into those action things at the start to explain how all the shields worked and everything. And then this time we got to see a little bit of that go. Like, I really like that fight when they were being hunted. And it turns out it must have been like just after they got picked up in the desert by Stilgar. And they still had Jamis's body.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, because this again threw me because it's like, oh, we're starting June again. That was a couple of years ago. And the movie starts like literally the same day as when it finished. And I was like, oh, that's within like the last few days of when this is. Oh, okay. This is all good. Yeah, and it starts with literally the guy that Paul killed, they're carrying his body back to be, you know, recycled or however they do their funerary rites. And they've been hunted by Harkonnens.
Yes, a couple of questions about the music. So that's Druidic. So I didn't think much of the music. Nothing in comparison to what Toto did.
Was it Zimmer Toto or was it?
It was mostly Toto.
Brian Eno and Brian Toto. Eno.
And Toto.
Yeah. It was like Zimmer is doing his thing, and
he's zimmering all over the place.
He is zimmering all over the place. And yes, it was. Yeah, that it was mind-bogglingly loud at times. Like in the cinema, there are a couple of times I went, Jesus Christ, that's fucking loud. I think it was funnily enough, another Villeneuve one, Blade Runner 2049. I remember watching and there was a problem with one of the speakers, and it was so loud that you could hear all of the pipes vibrating in George Street.
We're all in trouble when Zimmer finds the brown note.
yes.
Is that how he keeps getting all these jobs? He just threatens
100
them?
Cinema goers all shit themselves at once.
Got a shout out to the DOP and Villeneuve for the sequence on Giedi Prime. Is that the name of the?
Giedi Prime.
Yes.
And you're talking about Grieg Fraser?
I'm talking about the infrared sequence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when they go to Giedi Prime. Yeah, it's great. And Jill, you're going to love that. It's 100% Fade Rautha and 100%, I don't know, serial killer Zaddy? I don't know.
But like the look of it is something I haven't seen in a film before. And I was like, actually, that's fucking cool. That's sci-fi as fuck. Shooting it in infrared so that like people's eyes look weird. The light looks weird, but also the place itself is weird. Like I really dug the fact that they mentioned it very briefly that there's, that they have a black sun, like that Giedi Prime has a black sun. And it does feel like this is a culture that has grown up around this kind of weird, like black is their color of power or whatever. Their fireworks are these bizarre black ink splots. That
sounds cool.
It's like visually, that sequence was enough to make me go, fuck yeah, I'm on board for this. And like while they're fighting in the arena, there are these weird fucking dudes like who are clearly wearing their gimp masks and, you know, straight leather zaddies all over the place. But these weird kind of, I don't know, clowns? They're like rodeo clowns, but in gimp masks, it's fucked up. Yeah, that was what I wanted more of.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, trust me, you're going to have a good time there, Jill. When you get to it. Yeah, like, I mean, that was a real good success. Like, you know, there was the Geiger-esque stuff from the 84 Lynch version, and that's like, okay, that's kind of weird. And then it's kind of like, oh, you did kind of make it weird.
A bunch of people with red hair and landing strips. Like, I mean, if that's going to be your weird sci-fi styling, like, this one sounds much better.
Yeah, yeah. This one did feel a little bit more better. And it's a little bit more quirky and interesting. Yeah, but again, I say, should have been in the first one. All of those scenes would not have detracted from the pacing if they had have been in the first movie, because it would have, it's an establishment. Like, this is the thing. The first movie is your establishment. We have to establish everything. Then we do all the complicated shit in the middle, and then you have your, you know, come up at slash, you know, what is everyone, you know, your finale where all the bits are resolved. Like, okay, that's fine. Just run with that. It's all right. Yeah, but I'd liked it. It seems like it feels to me like I hated the film. I didn't. I thought it was great. I liked it.
No, I thought it was really, really good.
Do I want to see more Dune? Yeah, kind of. I don't know how they're going to top the popcorn fuck it next time, though. Maybe they'll have to get two sandworms at the same time.
Two sandworms in one bucket. I don't know whether, like, I'm hoping that they can continue it. I'm wondering whether they're going to go further down the whole crazy fucking route of, you know, where one of the characters turns into a sandworm and starts shitting spice, and, you know, yeah, you raise your eyebrows, but that's where we're headed.
there's so many weird things that we can go weirder, go harder, lean harder. Get in there.
Double-ended fuck bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So people, you and a friend can enjoy it together.
Yeah. Yes.
Funnily enough, never sold with popcorn. Don't know why.
Yet lots of butter. Never sold with popcorn, just lots of butter.
Butter.
How this one should be. Yeah, Dune. Like, get out there and see Dune. I'm sure everyone has seen Dune at the moment. It's the biggest movie in the world right now, and it's, you know, it's good. There's not really anything else there that's going to take it on, apart from
what are we doing next?
Well, I mean, what are we doing next week? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I know in the chat we're currently talking very heavily about Ghostbusters.
Oh, well, that doesn't come from much later. Next week we're doing Poor Things.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. Which is still in cinemas. Which,
yeah, came out a couple.
But comes out on streaming
months ago.
Comes out on streaming next week, March 8th, I think.
Ah, nice.
Or hits Hulu in America on March 8th. But yeah, Poor Things, which is a different take on a Frankenstein tale.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it did at the Oscars the night before we talk about it.
Yes.
Oh, so that would be an interesting one. Yes.
And then after that, we're delving deep into Ben Mendelsohn's territory. That's right, Mendo.
Mendo.
Oh my God, Mendo trying to do a French accent. This has been great to watch, by the way.
Bonjour. Bonsoir. Je m'appelle Mendo. what's it called, Jill?
The New Look on Apple Plus. It is a delve into the world of couture designers during World War II and the Nazis' occupation in France.
TV series. And then at the end of the month, we're going, who are we going to call upon again?
Ghostbusters.
The Ghostbusters. They're going to buff some ghosts.
Do that a little bit more pixelated. You could sound like the beginning of the game on the Commodore 64.
What? Oh. Ew.
Yeah.
And you know, while that's all happening, that's your homework for this month. We also got the Bad Batch has started up again.
Yes.
Or as I like to think of it, Andor season 1.5. Strong vibes of of Andor in that one.
Karina is asking, did I see that they're doing an exclusive popcorn bucket in America? Yes, you, if you wanted to, you can now, like Slimer. Yeah.
Someone out there is just like, I know what people want.
I know what nerds want. I like what dogs like.
I know what nerds do when the lights go down. Just give them this. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
But does Slimer have the teeth?
Yeah, and if you find the right version of Slimer, he's got quite the badonkadonk.
Oh, jeez.
Cool.
Sorry.
Can't wait for all of this. What else has been happening? Halo Season 2's been doing the rounds. Yes. And I had a small voice of after the last week's episode going, that didn't happen. That's not how that happened. That didn't happen. Yeah. They've changed it. I don't like it. Also, Shogun, quite good.
I haven't watched any of it yet. Is it something I should be seeking out?
Yes, because I might want to review it.
Ah, okay. Then, well, see, the thing is, from about the 19th of this month, I'm going to be somewhat indisposed because I'm going to have a doctor appointment and go into a surgery.
Yeah, you've got plenty of time to watch things, Quinny.
I'm going to have so much time to watch so much content.
Perhaps
and play on my new PlayStation.
I don't know.
5.
Something like The Sound of Music.
No,
potentially.
Do it while you're high on drugs, Quinny.
Yeah. You know, there's a little show called Parks and Recreation.
Never heard.
Come on. Come on, Quinny. You're just not trying hard enough. There's so much content out there for you.
I'm very excited because, as somebody else in the chat mentioned, the three body problem is kicking off at the end of March, 21st of March, which is a fucking fantastically interesting and unusual Chinese science fiction novel. That is a very high budget Netflix series that is really interesting take on sci-fi. So yeah, should be very interesting, I hope.
Right. Oh, thanks for joining us. That was Dune 2. How you doing?
Dune.
Dune. Thanks for joining us. Next, we're going to go raid someone, Q.
See who's around. Who can we raid? You know what? Let's go and raid Hex, because Fair and Barjo are currently playing Helldivers 2.
For freedom!
I like to think that maybe Helldivers 2 is what recreated this entire discussion about Starship Troopers, but I'm pretty sure that that's just a thing that comes around every half many years where people didn't get it.
I love Starship Troopers. We can always go through that. Let's go for some managed democracy. We'll see you all next time if you're a citizen and you can vote. Yeah.
Because service means citizenship. Want to know more?
No.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.